Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He's a former All-Pro tackle and Super Bowl champion.
The Chiefs' kingdom has firmly planted its flag on top of football's highest summit.
But now that he's retired, he's a man of leisure and still has yet to invite C-Dot and Rob over to his house.
A Sunday and a bunch of football on, a bunch of games going over there. Watch the games, kind of one larger hangout area.
It's 3 o'clock on Tuesday. Here's Mitchell Schwartz.
We're very happy to be joined in the 3 o'clock hour by former All-Pro right tackle Mitchell Schwartz. Joins us in the studio. Mitch, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I would like to talk to you about first. There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. But first, you have been on the field for a lot of amazing Patrick Mahomes things. On Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he did another amazing Patrick Mahomes thing. What's your reaction to the play?
That one's up there for all-timer for him. I mean, it's pretty incredible watching it in the moment. My favorite part of that play is when he first started escaping the pocket. I think there's a defensive lineman chasing him. And you could tell he, like, kind of peeked at him and just knew, like, oh, this dude has no chance. So he has what I call a one-tenth of a second faster than whoever's chasing him speed. Like, he seems to run faster when faster guys are chasing him or not need to run as fast when slower guys are. So he burns the one guy, and then obviously the Devin White attempt to tackle, the spin, the flip, all that stuff. It all comes together in such an amazing way that, on top of the stakes as well. I mean, I feel like for some people, the Wasp play is never really going to be replicated, even though it wasn't like quite as wow factor from all the different things in one specific play, but it was in the Super Bowl. So this one's up there. Luckily I got to watch it on TV like everybody else. I used to be out there trying to block for him and didn't get to see too many of those cool plays. So just every single camera angle that's come out, every single replay, it just gets cooler and cooler. And it's honestly more incredible, the flip throw part of that, like the fact that he just kind of knew Clyde was going to go to the corner there where he did, and just look at the wrist and laying it up there for him.
I made this point yesterday that you guys are incredible athletes, but even like, you know, who's a different athlete than the rest of you. Like, I've heard the way you talk about Von Miller. You talk about Von Miller just different than you talk about other pass rushers. He's going to be a first ballot Canton, Ohio guy that you could tell just watching that Sunday night football games, the rush from former players like yourself to be like, man, Pat's different. Wow. Pat's special. That even amongst the greatest athletes among us, to your point about him being just a tenth faster than everybody else, Pat's just the most talented player on the football field almost every time he steps on it.
Yeah, and it's more than the physical traits. I mean, we know that he can do things with a football no one else really can do, but it's the mental processing, it's the awareness, it's the kind of spatial sense of where the field is. I mean, how many times has he thrown the ball late, over the middle, across his body? Those are like the three things they tell quarterbacks never to do. Throw the ball late, over the middle, across your body. He does it all the time, and it never gets picked off. Like, he just always has a sense of where everybody is, and that includes the guy who's 50 yards across the field from him that he can't see. Like, it's just this kind of supernatural ability, and then you combine it with the arm strength and all the kind of crazy throws and the angles he can throw from, and then the athleticism and being able to change direction the way he does, being able to avoid people, to spin, to, you know, the Tennessee playoff game comes to mind, that little run. So just like every single attribute you want in a player, Pat basically has at the highest level. And he's also one of those guys that's just good at everything else he does. Like, he's awesome at golf. He's awesome at basketball. Like, all those kind of competitive athletic things, like, he's just good at. So he's one of those guys that's amazing at really anything he tries.
I think everybody has that person in their life. Like, I think of my life, there was this kid named Dustin Andrews that was just more athletic than me at just everything.
What a shout out.
He was just, like, a better basketball player than me. He was just faster than me. Like, he was just more athletic than me. Like, everybody has that person. Who was that person for you? Like, you went on to play in the NFL. But at some point in high school, there was some kid that you went up against that was just more athletic than you were.
Oh, well, in high school, I mean, I've always been the offensive lineman, so everyone's always more athletic than me. We had a quarterback, Raymond. Who's a lefty, you know, we call him Little Vic because he could sling it, but he was also a safety as well. So he'd play quarterback, then he'd go in and play safety because we had like 20, 25 guys on our roster. So most guys had to play both ways. But he was just, you know, crazy athlete, could kind of do everything. It was super smooth back there. He could throw it, he could run it. Obviously, he could play some defense and, you know, bring the truck stick a little bit too. So those, usually it's the quarterback of the football team or the running back who's playing both ways, or in baseball, you know, the guy who's playing shortstop or center field who can fly around. He's also probably pitching. Basketball, I mean, the guys who are the most athletic just stand out, and usually they're playing other sports as well. But I'll tell you what, in college, we had Javid Best, who was a running back who, you know, probably ran a 4.2 or 4.3, like legit 4.2, 4.3. He was a sprinter, had, you know, long speed, kind of like Tyreek. And he was one of those guys too. Like, you'd go play golf and he did 350. You'd play ping pong and he'd just beat you. Like, every single thing that he did, he was just the best at. And he was like legitimately the fastest guy in college at the time too, which is a fun guy to block for.
How many guys in the league do you think their career got off to the wrong start just because of the team they got drafted by? Like, Javid Best is maybe a different player if he gets drafted by the Ravens, but he got drafted by the Lions.
A lot. I mean, it's kind of crappy to say. It just, there's a lot of players that have kind of bad outcomes because of where they're drafted. They don't get the chance to develop. They don't get the chance to maybe be under the right coach who can understand their skill set. I mean, bringing it back to offensive line play, there's a lot of different ways to coach offensive line play. From the tackle position in particular, there's essentially two major techniques. One is more vertical and one is more kind of aggressive or sideways, horizontal, however you want to say it. But if you're a guy who was a vertical setter in college where taking a pass set, you're, you know, going almost straight back to get the block, and now you go to an offense that is all about quick game, it's all about, you know, setting flag, getting your hands on guys, it's not something you're used to, you're trying it, it's not working, you're a rookie, you're going against guys who are better than you, you start feeling down, you lose your confidence. Like, it's really simple for that to happen to really anybody at any position. I mean, I feel like we talked a couple weeks ago about Sky Moore and the playing time and, you know, how coach brings along receivers. But I think he does an awesome job of bringing those guys along, you know, not putting them out there to have 40 reps if the guy isn't ready and he has one or two bad plays and he gets really discouraged and he thinks, oh, I'm not doing good enough. And then, you know, the negative thoughts creep in. And so, you know, Coach Reed's always had an excellent ability to, you know, kind of bring out the best in guys, tailor things for everyone's strengths, but also bringing guys along. I mean, you go back to pass rushers as well. I mean, the kind of, I think of D Ford in my mind of being patient with him and allowing him to progress. And then, you know, those last two or three years, he turns into an awesome pass rusher. I mean, even, you know, Tano, just kind of letting him progress throughout things and get better. Where so many teams are so anxious to, you know, throw those guys out there too early, they fail, confidence gets killed. And realistically, most other teams, you're probably playing for at least two coaches, if not three. So it sucks to say, but there's just the development in the NFL. You think it's the pinnacle of sport. You think it's got all the best coaches, all the best situations. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And a lot of guys suffer because of it.
So I made my top four of Mahomes plays because we did that off the touchdown pass he had against the Buccaneers on Sunday. And my personal four were the left-handed throw against the Broncos on Monday Night Football. Just that's part of being a quarterback. Situation not ideal. We're down. You got to make a play to extend the drive. The touchdown pass against San Francisco, the one to Chris Conley, that to me from a physical aspect is still the most impressive play that I think he's made. Wasp and the touchdown run against the Tennessee Titans. Those were my four plays. Rob said he would swap out the Conley touchdown and add the 4th-and-9 play against the Ravens to Tyreek Hill. That would be his four.
Those are all good ones. The Chris Conley play was the first time in a film that our offensive line coach just stopped the film and said, hey guys, watch this. And we watched it. So when offensive linemen watch film, there's two camera angles. There's one from the sideline, there's one from the end zone. We typically watch the end zone because you can see all the linemen, you can see the spacing. Like, it's just a much better way to evaluate offensive line play. So he showed that play and then he went back to the side angle that, you know, all the skill guys watch on the quarterbacks. I was just like, take a look at the quarterback on this one. And so we actually watched it, and you could just see the frozen rope on the run into the corner of the end zone. Yeah, that was the first, like, wow play that we rewatched the next day in film because, you know, again, you're blocking in the moment. Like, I knew that that was a super cool play, but I was also trying to, like, shield off Armstead or one of those guys from getting to him. So you don't get to appreciate just how great they are. So, yeah, I like all those. You know, I love the kind of diving in midair throws. Those are pretty cool and just a kind of a crazy ability to create velocity when you're, you know, suspended in midair. So there's a couple, you know, I forget, it might have been an Indianapolis playoff game that he had one of those that I think he threw for a touchdown rolling out to the right side. And I could have sworn that the ball was going to die. And it didn't. The receiver caught it and, you know, it didn't hit the ground. Just those on the run, diving in midair, suspended plays. You know, a lot of guys can do a lot of the other things. I mean, Josh Allen can throw pretty well on the run. Rodgers can, you know, chuck it pretty good on the run. When you combine kind of all those different skills, like we were talking about, that he's so good at everything, the body control, the strength, the core ability to be able to, you know, hoist that thing out there and throw it. Those are the plays that you can really see all those things, and also the competitiveness as well, because most guys are going down, okay, that's not going to work. But the competitiveness to be like, no, like, I'm diving, but I can still get it 30 yards downfield to my guy, and he does. And it's really cool.
Coming up on the other side, I want to talk to you about the offensive line, and I want to learn more about bulletin board material, because it's obvious that the Chiefs heard what Tampa Bay said and used it as motivation. How does that work over the course of the week? Happy to be joined in studio right now by former All-Pro tackle Mitchell Schwartz, joining us on The Drive right here on 610 Sports Radio.
This is The Drive with Carrington Harrison. If you missed Patrick Mahomes on Monday at 2:15, you can listen on demand on the brand new Odyssey app or at 610sports.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Kansas City, it's Brett Veach. You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
So coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll play Contender or Pretender with one of the 19 2-2 teams in the league. Mitch, half the league is 2-2 right now. Everybody is just lumped. Seattle is 2-2. The Rams.
Geno's the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, it's so crazy right now how bunched up the league is. We'll get your thoughts on who's a contender and who's a pretender here coming up in just a bit. I wanted to get the former player perspective on bulletin board material because it is very obvious that the Chiefs heard exactly what Tampa Bay said and clearly used that as motivation to go out there. I actually think that that is the best that I've seen their offensive line play since your last game. The game against the Buffalo Bills where it was raining and it was terrible. The Chiefs ran the ball really effectively. I think this is the best game we've seen since then. I thought their offensive line was fantastic against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that's interesting. Of course, that game, I only played one series, so thank you for saying that we did so awesome without me. I appreciate that.
They did. I mean, they did do really well, though. I mean, I wish you had played the whole game. I still think they would have done well if you were there, but they did play really well.
I know. No, that game was awesome. It was like 250-plus rushing yards and it was fun to see. Yeah, bulletin board material, I don't care about it. That's not something that motivates me. Like, I go about my business the same all the time and, you know, try to give the same effort, try to give the same intensity going into the game. You know, I think when you get kind of excited or you do more that week, like, what does that say about the performance the week before in Indy? Like, it validates all the people that said that the team just showed up and didn't really care and they kind of coasted and they weren't as mentally locked in. So that's why I never liked that personally. Like the, oh, I'm playing harder this week because it's the Broncos, or oh, I'm playing harder because this guy said I wasn't very good. Like, if I'm playing harder this week, why didn't I play as hard last week? Like, I think that's a bad kind of idea to go by. But in the broader sense, bulletin board material does exist. And I think, fortunately for the Chiefs, unfortunately for the Buccaneers, that was combined with a poor performance the week before. And so I've been through a few poor performances on the offensive line, and I know kind of the kick in the butt from, you know, Coach Heck and Coach Reed on needing to protect the quarterback better, needing to run the ball better, you know, him challenging you that week in practice. You know, you're definitely putting the pads on and going 9-on-7 and doing the physical things. So you're already hearing it from your coach from the week before, and now all of a sudden you get the next opponent saying, oh, these guys aren't a challenge. Like, that's the biggest sign of disrespect you can get. I mean, there's bulletin board material where like, oh, we're better than them, we're going to beat them. Or, yeah, I think I'm the best, you know, quarterback in the NFL, and they're not as good as me. But to go into a game and just say, oh, yeah, these guys aren't really a challenge, our defensive line should have a coming out party, like, that sucks. That is, a pretty stark, you know, thought on the state of your offensive line, the state on your team. And so that combined with the week before, combined with Coach Reed and Coach Heck, I'm sure giving them a little bit of a kick, just came together into this beautiful outcome. And yeah, the offensive line played awesome. I mean, still a few little things here or there that could be a bit better. But going up against, I think, the top-rated defense, if not, you know, top three defense, you know, obviously a charged atmosphere. We saw in the first quarter a couple of their guys celebrating a lot and thinking they were pretty sweet, and those guys got shut down pretty quickly. So a great performance, a great validation of what this offensive line should be, what we all think they can and should be the rest of the year. Now, the key is going to be to take that same energy, take that same preparation, that same focus, and put it into every single game so you don't have games like the Colts game.
I thought it was the most disrespectful thing I've heard a player say towards the Chiefs. That I've thought in some ways, they kind of called the Chiefs soft and not physical. And in football terms, that just seems like the ultimate fighting words. Like, hey, we expect to have a coming out party. I know we got 6 sacks. We expect to do better. Like, I thought it was kind of openly calling out the Chiefs in a way that, I said this to Mahomes yesterday, like, you guys just kind of end these conversations. You don't really start these conversations. The Chiefs don't really do a lot of talking in this way. Other teams normally say it, and the Chiefs kind of respond. It actually reminded me a lot of Jacksonville. I was going to say that. It reminded me a lot of Jacksonville.
Yeah, and we broke Jacksonville. They were never the same after we got done with them. Yeah, that game was weird because Jacksonville, they were doing all the talking. The linebacker was doing all the talking. We smoked them. I mean, we defeated them every way you can. And then they were, like, trying to start a fight after the game, too. They, like, bum-rushed Sammy. And, you know, Sammy's not a guy who talks at all. So it was weird that they kind of tried to pick on him. I don't remember if it was them trying to kind of get at him and try to start something with everyone defending or whatever. But, yeah, very similar kind of pregame to Jacksonville. I think it was Telvin Smith was the linebacker.
It was.
Kind of what he said. But, like, Shaq Barrett isn't really a crap talker. Like, I would have expected it from, like, Devin White or one of those other guys or one of the safeties. But, hearing it from Barrett, that was a little bit odd. It's almost like he got caught in the thought and was just, like, honest and then kind of just said what he thought. Which, I mean, look, if you're busy watching that Colts game for, you know, 3 times in a row and all the install and all those things, and, you know, the Chargers game the week before, I didn't think the O-line had the greatest performance ever. Like, I understand why you thought that going into it. Like, it's not like you're really watching last year's tape where the O-line was playing better. You know, you're watching a little bit of that Cardinals game, but Cardinals – pretty depleted up front. And so if you're a guy who just signed a big contract and your D-line's been balling for a while, you watch the Colts game, watch the Chargers game, you kind of throw out the Cardinals game because you say, yeah, we're so much better than these guys. I understand the thought process of thinking that. It's just the saying it out loud part. And, you know, getting back to what you said, I do think that's one of the more disrespectful things like you can say about an offensive line especially. And I'm glad the guys responded the way they did.
I made the analogy in the Colts game that it kind of felt like when your parents get mad at you for getting a C on a paper, and they're not mad because you failed, but they're mad that you know you didn't do your best and you're just better and you're more capable. Like, the Chiefs are an A team. The Colts are not a good football team. Like, we have not had any instances this season other than the final drive against the Chiefs that they are a good football team, that it's going to be one of those games that you'll look back at the end of the season and think, man, how did the Chiefs lose to the Colts? The Colts won 5 games this year. The Chiefs won 13 games. How did they lose to that team that I do wonder if that was the game that they needed to kind of wake him up a little bit and say, hey, we got to bring it each and every week. We can't have a mental lapse for just a second, especially with how competitive this league is. And that's what they needed to get right back on the path for Monday Night Football game. They got Buffalo here coming up in a couple of weeks. They got San Francisco still, who played really well on Monday Night Football. Like, you got bigger fish to fry. Don't let a team like Indianapolis derail your season.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I tend to push back. Like, you shouldn't need that. You should go out every week and you should dominate and you should prove how good you are every single week. And that's kind of the mark of a superior team, that you can go out and it doesn't really matter what the circumstances are. You're favored to win. You're supposed to be the better team. You're supposed to be the best offense. You have the best quarterback. You have the best scheme. Just go prove it and do it again and again and again. And so that's where maybe a little bit of, you know, the negativity is there for me, that, you know, they needed this quote-unquote bad game or this C effort to kind of get a kick in the pants and get restarted. And again, that's only the third week in the season after a Thursday game where you had extra time off. So I don't really understand how complacency could have set in that quickly, or how they could have gone, you know, and theoretically not quite been as, you know, emotionally invested in the game that early in the year. So that's what gives me a little bit of pause. Like, I understand that happening in like week 9 or week 10 and you're 8-1 and getting a little boring and the season's grinding down. There's still 2 weeks to the bye and all those other factors. But again, week 3 coming after a Thursday game that the team didn't play awesome, and you would have thought that the would have been a huge emphasis on preparation for that week, and still coming out and, you know, playing not to your best capabilities, almost gives me a little bit more pause for the future than, you know, excited about this restart.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Coming up on the other side, I want to play a very simple game of contender or pretender. Feels like the entire league is 2-2 right now. Who do you think is a real 2-2 with real upside? Who do you think is a pretender? We'll play that next with Mitchell Schwartz. Keep it locked right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison, the most miserable Mizzou fan in the metro.
My team stinks.
On 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
You're listening to CDOT.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho.
It's been a while since we've done Ask Mitch. We'll do that here coming up in just a bit. 913-586-7610. This is a little different week since the Chiefs play on Monday as opposed to Sunday. So this week's a little bit off. We also don't have a show tomorrow because of the final Royals game of the season. Very happy to be joined in studio right now by Mitchell Schwartz. So what I want to play right now is a simple game of contender or pretender. This is as bunched up as I can remember the league being, that we always say, oh, well, there's no great team. This year might be more true than ever. Like, I think the best team in the league is Philadelphia. I don't know if I'm willing to call Philadelphia a great team. Kansas City's obviously in that conversation. Buffalo's in that conversation. But we've seen great NFL teams. I don't know if I would put any of those teams in that conversation just yet, but it's also, we've seen 1 month of NFL action. So I want to kind of get a gauge of who you think is real and who you think is fake in contender or pretender.
We're not going to go through every 2-2 team because, as Carrington laid out, there's like 20 of them and we don't have the time, but we'll start in the NFC with the Chiefs' most recent opponent. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 2-2. Weirdly, 0-2 at home, 2-0 on the road. Are they a contender or pretender?
I got contender on them. I mean, they've got enough kind of that infrastructure, and they've been battling some injuries and health-related things. And once that clears up, they're going to, you know, tick up a little bit in terms of production. So I'd still label them a contender. Also, NFC South, pretty weak. So they're going to get into the playoffs regardless, and they'll probably have some good games against bad teams to gain some confidence back.
I agree with you. I mean, their two losses are against Green Bay and Kansas City. I mean, certainly not, you know, two losses that you're ashamed of by any means. I'm with you on the NFC South. I mean, who am I picking to win that division? Am I picking Atlanta to win that division? I'm picking Carolina or New Orleans. So it's kind of by default, I'm going to pick Tampa Bay. I also think something encouraging happening on Sunday. The Bucs can score. I mean, their biggest problem the first three games of the season was that their offense just was non-existent. They only scored 3 offensive touchdowns the first 3 weeks. You know their defense is better than how they looked against Kansas City, but the fact that they could score and move the ball against the defense that I do think is capable in Kansas City, I think, is the most encouraging thing. So I'll still go with contender. They still have some problems, but at this point in the season, who doesn't have many problems?
Yeah, and again, it's injuries. I mean, their center's out for a while. Their left tackle was hurt the first few weeks. They had a left guard retire in the offseason. They had a right guard leave in free agency. And then the backup center got hurt. They had like three different receivers get injured. I mean, they had to sign Cole Beasley of all people. So, yeah, it's a ton of injuries. And once they get healthier, they'll score more points and they'll win more games.
We'll head out west and contender or pretender with last year's Super Bowl champion, the Rams, whose two wins are against teams no one believes in, but two losses against contenders. Do you believe LA is a contender or a pretender?
Ooh, so they're like a playoff contender, but like a Super Bowl pretender, if that makes sense. Like, I think they're good enough to like win some games in the regular season, maybe get in the playoffs, but like long-term Super Bowl, I think pretender. That offensive line is just so bad right now. And again, a couple injuries and retirement and other stuff, but Stafford's going to get crushed. I mean, he was hobbling around yesterday. He's a guy who's got some injury history and, you know, seems to kind of gut through a lot of things. McVay's having to change the offense around because the O-line just can't perform the way they did last year and they can't run the same offense. They have to regress back to kind of the Jared Goff, more simplistic offenses where they just run, play action, and throw all those screens that San Francisco knew was coming. So long-term prospects, I got pretender.
I have to agree with you. I have them as a pretender too. And you know how much I like the Rams, Rob. I agree with you on the offensive line.
Those LA teams, man.
Yeah. I think they're the offensive line's an issue. They also just don't have any other weapon other than Cooper Kupp. Like, it's 2022. You need three viable pass catchers. I don't care if your running back is one of them, but you got to have other offensive weapons. It's basically Cooper Kupp playing with a bunch of guys. Allen Robinson has done nothing so far this season. Like, he was supposed to be your number two, your big acquisition. If you're sitting around waiting for Odell Beckham to come save you week 7, week 8, it really tells me where you are as an offense. I got to go pretender. Right now, there's a lot more things to not like about the Rams than like about them.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a long season, but O-lines typically don't get much better unless they've got like five guys becoming healthy. So I don't really like their prospects. And let's hear the next one, Rob.
We'll stay out west. Their opponent last night, newly quarterbacked by Jimmy G. Are the 49ers contenders or pretenders?
This one's closer than the Rams, but I'll go contender just because I think the defense is so good that it can overcome the offensive deficiencies. I mean, Kyle's going to scheme it up. We saw some cool things. We saw the Debo catch and run. I mean, Ayuk, once they actually start utilizing Kittle back in their offense, seems like they forgot about him. We know Jimmy has a certain ceiling to him, and you know the O-line's got a ceiling as well this year, but man, that defense is good. That D-line's awesome, and I think that gives them a chance to be, you know, kind of a middle of the pack offense and an elite defense, and those teams can do some damage, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, you and I agree. I'm going to take contender for them as well. Some of it's because of the NFC. Like, I don't think there's that many good teams in the NFC. I think they're going to win their division, so kind of by default, I think that makes them to be a contender. And just everything we said about the Rams, they just have more weapons than the Rams. Like, they just have more explosive offensive players. So I got to go with contender for San Francisco, because just in the NFC, like, how many teams do I think are contenders? Not just one or two. There's got to be at least three or four teams that you think can make a run. I would put the Niners in that conversation.
Heading to the AFC, we'll go down south. Last year's number one seed in the AFC, the Tennessee Titans, are 2-2. Mitchell Schwartz, are they a contender or a pretender?
I got pretender on this one. I don't have to think too hard about it. I mean, it seems like they've always outperformed what we expected of them. I don't put it past them to do the same this year, but in terms of just looking at that team, looking at the roster, how they're performing, man, I just don't see it. It doesn't seem like a team that's, you know, explosive. They traded AJ Brown, and the rookie they drafted is kind of playing a new position on a wide receiver unit than he did in college. So he's already adjusting. Then he just got hurt. So they don't have the weapons. The O-line isn't as good. Henry's not as good because of it. Tannehill's got a ceiling on him. The defense, they lost Harold Landry before the season even started. I just don't see it.
Where do you think they are in point differential this year, the Titans?
Oof. I mean, based on the question, I'm going to go like minus 21.
Where do you think they are, Rob?
I have the standings in front of me, so I know the answer.
They are minus 26. The only teams in the league with a worse point differential than the Tennessee Titans right now are the Colts and the Commanders. Ooh. The only teams in the league. Absolute pretenders. I mean, why are we even talking about them? They're a pretender. What are we doing here?
Let's stay in the AFC. We'll head up north. Last year's Super Bowl runner-up, the team that came into KC and got the AFC title win, are Joe Burrow's Bengals contenders or pretenders?
I'm going to go let's go contender. I was going to say pretender, but I feel like the season's so long and they're kind of like a build-up into a team, kind of like they did last year, that the O-line, it's like all new parts and they're kind of just getting assembled and getting used to each other. You know, Burrow, whether they force him into it or he chooses to, is going to have to start playing a little bit smarter and getting the ball out and not trying to hold on to it quite as long. I mean, they've got the weapons. You know, we talked about the weapons with a couple other teams. They got that. I think the defense still has a bunch of talent and kind of outperforms what we expected of them. So I'll stick with contender for them. You know, they would have to get a lot further into the year. I just think they've got, you know, a lot of good players, a lot of good pieces, and you know, a theoretically improved roster from last year. So I'll let the length of the season bear that out.
I'm with you. I'm going to go contender for them as well. Certainly not as strong as I feel about some other teams, but I mean, that Jets win now is a little bit more impressive than we gave it credit. They dominated the Jets. And then to beat Miami last week, which is one of the better teams in the league, I'm going to go with contender. I'm with you on the offensive line. Maybe we were a little bit too premature. I thought their offensive line actually looked decent against Miami, a team that I do think can get to the quarterback a little bit. We know they got weapons offensively and a capable defense, so I'm going to keep them in the contender category. There's a lot of teams that feel a lot shakier than where I think Cincy is right now, so I'm going to go contender with them.
We'll stay in their division. The Cleveland Browns, whose goal was to tread water until Deshaun time, are 2-2. Are they a contender or a pretender?
I got pretender just because I'm not a huge Jacoby Brissett guy, and as good as the offensive line and the running game and the two running backs, and they've got, you know, a couple of receivers that can do some things. I don't think that really plays long term. Not really looking forward to when Deshaun gets back either. So I'm just going to go pretender on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go pretender with them too. I mean, if you're a team like them and, you know, to your point, Rob, you're trying to tread water until Deshaun Watson gets back, you don't know what you can't do. You can't afford to lose a game to the Atlanta Falcons. Like, those are games that you got to put in the win column.
Jets when you're up 13 with a minute and a half left.
You know what I mean? Like, you got to put those games in the win column that you got to look to probably be a 7-4 by the time Deshaun gets back to really give yourself a chance. And for you to be losing games like the 13-point lead with a minute 55 to go against the Jets and then to lose to the Atlanta Falcons. Like, the Falcons have been a little bit surprising. Nobody thinks the Falcons are making the playoffs. Those are just games that you got to win. So I got to go with a pretender for them. No Deshaun Watson. Myles Garrett right now isn't playing. Just too many things are against Cleveland for me to have them in the contender category.
Our final one before break. In the Chiefs division, the Denver Broncos, let's ride. Are they contenders or pretenders?
I can't get on board with that. I'm going to go pretender. I don't think our defense is that great. Gregory just got hurt. Russ just hasn't looked good. Straight up hasn't looked good. Their better running back just got hurt. The other running back fumbles a bunch. I just don't see it. I mean, I think they're going to get better just by the nature of, you know, getting more time together and new coach and all that stuff. But on the whole, for the, you know, big picture, I got pretender.
I have not been impressed by the Denver Broncos at any point this season. We have seen an entire month of Broncos football. I mean, they played on Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, and the Vegas game. It just wasn't up against anything, so you got a chance to watch a good part of that. Not a single second this season I'd be like, oh, this Broncos team's kind of good. Not one time. I think they have the worst coach in the league. I think Russell Wilson is very inconsistent. I think we completely overrated their weapons in the preseason. We were talking about their team. I got pretender for the Broncos.
I'm with you. I mean, it's good for the Chiefs. How about this vaunted AFC West that we expected?
Fake.
as usual, the Chargers are not going to be the team everyone thought, and they're going to deal with injury stuff. Denver's just not going to be quite as good. The Raiders not going to be quite as good, and the Chiefs are probably going to run away with it.
All right, so coming up on the other side, I want to get your just stories, memories, recollection about playing in Sunday night, Monday night football games. And also Ask Mitch. It's been a while since I don't think it's actually done at any point this season. 913-586-7610. If you got a question for Mitch, ask it on the text line. We'll also talk about Monday night football against the Raiders. That's coming up. Keep it locked right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with CDOT. Catch former Chiefs linebacker Derek Johnson every Monday morning at 7:30 with Fesco in the morning on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
like, I don't even care about that. The pregame and the running onto the field is the nervous part. Like, the whole game's up ahead. It's the locker room after the game that I miss. The plane ride home when you're just like, that adrenaline is still coursing through you and it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning and you just can't fall asleep because you're so excited from the game. No, I mean, I've talked about it before. Football was super stressful for me. I didn't necessarily enjoy the lead up to the games, like the initial part of the game, kind of all the things that are stressful, but like, we just beat the crap out of them and they were talking smack before. We validated ourselves. We're back on the plane. We're in the locker room. Like, you're all celebrating. That's the stuff that I miss. And that's the stuff that just can never be replicated really for the rest of my life. So it's those moments. I mean, the first time, I think it was 2 years ago when I was injured, we had that game where we went to Oakland. You know, I wasn't traveling because I was hurt. I think it was the first game in that Death Star new stadium, and it was the crazy, you know, either Sunday or Monday night game, and I was just thinking, like, man, this would be an awesome plane ride to be back on. But, no, in terms of the stress of, like, leading up to it and all those things, like, taking the field was, oh, man, we're about to start in 8 minutes, and so it wasn't quite as exciting as most people would assume, at least for me. I mean, I enjoyed watching everyone else take the field. It's kind of fun to watch Travis and Pat and do their little dances and get cheered on, so I enjoyed that part of it.
What week was bigger in the locker room or around the team? Was it Raider week or Bronco week?
Wow. Probably Bronco week, just because they've been better the last few years. Like, I think it's relatively even. You know, once the Raiders got a little better and then Gruden started doing the bus thing and taking the laps, then Raider week kind of jumped over him because that became a thing. But it's usually, I mean, it's the team that is more competitive. It's the team that, you know, gives you more of a challenge. So, those are pretty even, you know, when everything's neutral. It just depends on which team's doing better at the time.
All right, Rob, let's get to a brand new edition. The first edition of the year of Ask Mitch. Text line 913-586-7610. Mitch, do you think we should just crown Lamar Jackson with the MVP award right now?
No, absolutely not. It's been 4 weeks. It's not even a quarter of the season because we got 17 games. I mean, I'm not being a hater, but like, he's a guy that has struggled the last couple of years to stay 100% healthy for the full season. You just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, he has the benefit of having a defense that's not that great, so there is a chance that like, he's going to put up some stats at the end of games and have the fourth quarter comebacks that people, you know, still think that he can't do. So he's going to have the stats. He's going to be a huge part of the reason that they're good. But to say that 4 weeks into the year, no, no.
I do think the MVP is probably one of these four people: Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, Mahomes, or Lamar. I think it's going to be really tough for a player outside of those four to win. For one, you have to be a quarterback to do it, and just what team is going to be good enough and you put up the numbers that you would need to generate to be able to win MVP.
So I could see two other guys. I could see Herbert, if they do kind of have a resurgence and they end up going 12-5, 13-4. I could see Tua if he is healthy enough to like get back and play football and, you know, be as effective as he was the first few weeks. The MVP is a combination of performance and narrative. So you want to have some sort of story attached to the guy. And so for Tua and Herbert, it would be kind of pushing through these early injuries, being a young guy, taking an ascending team and, you know, forcing them into the playoffs, becoming one of the better teams in the NFL. But realistically, those four guys you named, I mean, they should be the front runners.
Mitch, other than sports right now, what are you watching?
That's a good one. Honestly, nothing. I haven't been watching a ton of TV or a ton of shows lately. I know my wife was watching the Jeffrey Dahmer thing for a bit.
I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah, she started watching that. I was probably watching football on Sunday, and she was bored, so she started watching on her own. It seems like that's the type of show that you either can't binge because it's like so much that it's like too much to binge all at once, but on the flip side, because it is so much and so heavy, like, you kind of do want to binge it and get through it. So I haven't watched that one. I'd probably be interested in it. I did like Mindhunter back in the day, but that one was a little frustrating because I feel like they didn't like get into the characters quite as much as I would have liked.
913-586-7610. When in the huddle, is it always serious or are some players messing around?
Oh, no, some players are messing around. Usually Kelsey's the bigger goofball, so he's likely to say something funny or do something. I mean, I always tried to like be funny if possible, like especially if the moment called for it. Like sometimes if it's super serious and then you can tell everyone's like stressing out a little bit, you know, you can make a joke or you could, you know, kind of do something to lighten the mood. But Kelsey's, you know, kind of a classic guy who's going to lighten the mood. Usually the skill guys, I mean, if the game's progressing and everyone's having fun, like, it's easier to kind of be in the huddle and be making jokes. But essentially, once the quarterback, like, enters the huddle, then everyone goes silent and he's allowed to take over.
Who's the lineman that you play with that can eat the most?
Ooh. All time, Sean Laveau in Cleveland. That dude demolished food. With the Chiefs, for my first couple years, it was Ja Reed. He could fluctuate weight like nobody else. I mean, he showed up one year and needed to lose like a bunch of weight right before camp, and he just like did it. I don't know how he was able to, but so he could put away some food. Of the current guys, probably Wiley or Allegretti. I'd say those guys can definitely put it down.
913-586-7610. Do you think there is another player on the team who will have 1,000 yards receiving this year outside of Travis Kelce?
It seems like no. It seems like they're all going to be in like that 7 to 950 range where I think even Pat said earlier in the year, like, sorry, fantasy owners, you know, we're going to spread it around. Like, there's not that one guy that's that much better than everybody else. I think they all complement each other really well. And so one week, McColl's going to have 150, next week, Juju, next week, MVS. And it seems like they're all going to get a relatively even amount of touches and yards.
Someone wants to know, how do you think Orlando Brown's playing right now?
Better this week, obviously.
Are you noticing maybe an injury with him? Is there something physically off with him that you're seeing?
You know, I know that he had the knee injury going into the Indy week, and there was a couple plays where he was getting up in a little ginger. You know, just watching him, I haven't noticed, you know, that big of a difference. The guy who looks more injured to me, honestly, is Trey. I mean, we saw some things that I think we talked about last week, just atypical of him. And, you know, third and one for forever, it was just like run that little quick hitting right behind Trey. And the Chiefs haven't done that. They didn't do this past week on a few different third and ones. So that makes me think that maybe, you know, he doesn't quite have the full health that he had, you know, going into week one. So, but in terms of Orlando, I mean, getting better, it's always this give and take because he's a big guy. You want to get on guys. You want to use your length. You want to kind of end the rush immediately. And with kind of the scheme of the offense and all the other things, like figuring out exactly where everyone's going to be, how to use that properly, it's a little bit of, you know, kind of a guessing game. And, oh, on this particular rush, I'm going to use this pass set. And all of a sudden, you know, it doesn't work on that one, but it works on the other. So I think, you know, he's played some good ball. He's had some bad reps. But this was a good week for the O-line.
This is our last question here. What watch is on your wish list?
Ooh, wish list. The wish list is never ending and constantly changing. I've got a couple I'm looking at right now. There's a Hublot that is a little bit bigger. It would fit my wrist really well. Just trying to find an XL strap for that. And there's a Breguet watch as well that if I get that, you're going to love it. It's rose gold. It's
got the one you got on right now.
The one I got on now is pretty sweet, but the Breguet, if I get it, I think you'll really appreciate it. It's also got an alarm complication, so you can like set it to like 3 p.m. and all of a sudden we'd turn on the air and my watch starts chiming, telling me it's ready, it's go time. So we'll see if we can get a longer strap for that one as well. That's my issue, and honestly, one of the better things about being big is I can eliminate a lot of watches that I should or want to get because they don't fit. So kind of helps me stay in check.
All right, we hand things off to the Royals. Tomorrow we are off, and then it is just me and you for the rest of the fall. And I know you are very excited about that. Catch you guys on Thursday. It's The Drive.
Hey, everyone. Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us, and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.